This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Backspin Golf. Let me get my voice right so I can be like the idiot commentary we get on, NBC Golf or any of them. Did I just throw in a little social commentary on golf telecast? You're damn right I did. Anyway, it's great to have you with us again. And it's also great to start off the show today with somebody. I'll say this before I say hello to him. Somebody that I respect more than he knows. Somebody that has worked with my older brother, Mitchie, who, if you listen to the show, you know who that is, because he and Darren Bunch have been working together, and I'll find out exactly how long if he knows, doing incredible work. Talking Golf Getaways is the pod. Darren does amazing. It says in his bio at Golf Getaways on Twitter, marketing and operations consulting, which is a very fancy way of saying that word that I love. He is a, two words, content creator, and one of the best in any form of content creation, not just golf, but he really is. And so I'm going to talk to him a little bit about that and how he gets to, do this for a job and just travel to all these golf courses and do all kinds of stuff. Unbelievable. I'm really happy I get a chance to speak with him. Hi, Darren.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, I'm okay.
I learned something just now in that intro. I've never really thought about who's older between the two of you. I always just assumed that the two of you came out at the exact same time.
Well, I'm not so sure. My mom would have liked that. We weren't the biggest babies, but two of us at the same time. I'm actually surprised that just from knowing the dynamic of our relationship, my brother and I,
yes,
that you couldn't automatically tell that he was 4 minutes older than I was, because he's such an overbearing, the typical older brother. I mean, so I'm a little shocked you couldn't.
And what's funny is he says that about you. So yeah, that's why I wouldn't know.
It doesn't work with a younger brother, twins or not. So he's once again, it's all BS coming out of his mouth. And now, how long have you two guys been working together?
I am not very good at dates, remembering years and whatnot.
Ballpark.
I mean, it's been decades at this point. We met at an international network of golf function. I think at the World Golf Hall of Fame in Florida.
Wow.
And
wow.
I don't know if I've told this story on your thing. I've told it before on the podcast, our podcast, Talking Golf Getaways, mm-hmm. That I thought he was you. Like I had met you briefly at an event for Castle Air Museum at a golf course in Central California.
Wow.
You were there with, I don't remember, some other celebrity from the
some
time.
Some huge star.
Exactly.
Huge star. Yeah.
And so when I met Mitch in an elevator and I told him what a big fan I was, and then I said, would it embarrass me too much if I told you I've seen every episode of 90210? Mitch just played along. He literally big timed me and went, oh, I get that a lot. And it wasn't until later that night that somebody said to me, well, he has a brother and that's not him. And I was blown away. I had no idea. I had no idea there were two of you.
That made my day right there. I'm just telling you. And the funny part is, and we'll get to the golf stuff, but As you know, well, maybe one of the great things about having your own show, and it's an award-winning show, so I can do what I want, is I can talk and share stories about anything and then some golf. But here's the great thing. Because we were both actors, and I understand why sometimes, because I did it. We were both actors, and when you look exactly like the other person, when he was working, for example, he was on Not Necessarily the News on HBO, which was a fantastic show for 6 or 7 years. And I wasn't working during part of that time. People would come up to me and say, I love that show you're on. I watch it every time. And the first few times you go, either it's not me, it's my brother, or you go, thank you, if you don't want to deal with it. And then you get to a point where you go, you get mad and you take it out on the poor person that said it, and vice versa. He would do the same thing when I was on 902 and somebody would come up to him and say,
sure.
The first couple times you do it, and then you say, hey, listen, blank, that's not me, it's my brother. Anyway,
the funny thing is, when they told me, they were like, he's not the one on 90210, he's the one on Dawson's Creek, which I assume were just the same person at that point.
Well,
but I was a huge Dawson's Creek fan too, so it was pretty funny.
Yeah, but here's the part that I hate to burst your bubble. He was on Dawson's Creek.
Right.
I never did Dawson's Creek. Oh,
right.
I see what you mean.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
I burst my own bubble there, which I do a lot. All right. And by the way, since we're on the topic of Mitchie and you, we're going to talk a little bit about here. Hold on. I wrote this stuff down. We're going to talk a little bit about Gamble Sands.
Yes.
But this is the thing that kills me about, well, you don't do it, but Mitchie does it all the time. You guys will be at Bandon Dunes on the coast of Oregon in the most beautiful setting, and he'll take a picture of the ocean and the golf hole, and he'll send it to me.
Yes.
And so I get that text, and then I send him a picture of my driveway, because that's what I'm looking at. Okay. He does it all. And I'm happy that he gets it, maybe, but I can't believe he keeps doing it to me. It's
however,
like,
we brought you along one time, didn't we?
One time.
Sweetens Cove.
Yes.
Not really on the ocean, but
Sweetens Cove was fantastic. I have a great picture in my living room. I see it every night next to my TV of Sweetens Cove. That was a great trip, and we had a lot of fun. That place was amazing. But I don't know, you've been to 400 places, and you took me to Sweetens Cove, which is, I don't know, a 3.5-hour drive from where I am. That's my point. You're like my brother.
We had to start somewhere.
Yeah, okay, forget. Yeah, but you started, but you never kept going. All right. Last week, I had Jason Bruno on the show, who is a wonderful guy, and we talked about the Matchbox at Tobacco Road. We had a great conversation. But you, Mr. Darren Bunch, I want you to talk about this and Tobacco Road a little bit, because the people that listen every week, and we have new listeners, as you know, every week. This place, I am going to get there. I think we should all meet there.
And everyone is listening.
Have a weekend. Not good point. Quit. This is my show. Quit making me feel stupid. No, I meant you and me and Mitchie and Jason, maybe, and a couple of people.
Well, that would be fun.
Yeah. And make a weekend of it. And, you know, anyway. So explain to the people again a little bit about first Tobacco Road and then the Matchbox, which is this par 3. I still can't really get it through my head what this place is.
Okay, well, Tobacco Road first is Mike Strand's, what I believe is Mike Strand's greatest work.
Wow.
I'm one of the only people I know who has played every Mike Strand's design golf course in the country, who didn't work for him, you know, had to go play them.
Yeah.
But there are a couple out here in California. There are a couple up in Virginia. There's down by Mitch in Myrtle Beach. There's Caledonia and True Blue. And then there's Tobacco Road and Todd Hill Farm here in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it is really just like playing in a work of art. He was an artist. He sketched golf holes. It's got these heaving orange dunes that you play through. The opening tee shot is this thing where you can't really see where you're going and it makes your knees knock. And then what his trickery was that he could really make you, he could make your heart thump on shots, but there really was a lot more landing area than you realized. Like the shot was never really as hard as it looked. And so because of that, he was able to really get inside golfers' heads. And if you're a player like me, you fell in love with that and just want more and more and more of it. Yeah. Some people don't get it. And that's fine too. You know, there's 20,000 other golf courses to play in America. Go play one or the other ones if you don't like it. But overwhelmingly, and I get all the feedback surveys for Tobacco Road, overwhelmingly people come off and are just blown away and ready to go play again and have a blast. So Mike passed away way too early. I don't recall what age it was at this point.
He was young.
And so, you know, we're left with this body of work. So Mark Stewart, the owner at Tobacco Road, who was the kind of the visionary who brought him in, he's the co-owner now, but he was the visionary who brought Mike in way back when on this depleted mining site that they needed to do something with. There's a piece of the property where they took all the spoils from building Tobacco Road 28 years ago, almost 30 years ago. And they put them around this irrigation pond, basically. And Strands had looked at this pond and thought about originally, well, let's route a hole over this pond or around it. But then they did that anyway at hole 14, which was a little more accessible. So it didn't make sense to do it twice, basically, on the back nine.
Right.
So this pond is just sat there as an irrigation pond. Most players who play Tobacco Road have never seen it. It's behind the trees. And Mark's walked around that property, that corner of the property for 20 years. What do we do out here? What do we build? And eventually, the technology of artificial turf caught up. Like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, we probably couldn't have done this.
Right.
But the technology of this kind of thing, and what Marshall and Carlton do with the work, they're the ones who were the builders on this.
Right.
They can very closely approximate grass.
That's amazing.
It's unbelievable. And so what they were able to do in building this 12-hole course, the Matchbox, they've got holes around this pond, and they've routed holes through the trees. And you couldn't do that if we tried to grow grass out there. We would have to cut down 75% of the trees. We would have had to put in irrigation. It would have been a 2 or 3 year process. This was built in 6 months. Like really, they were thinking about it before February, but we announced it in February. It opened on August 1st.
Unbelievable.
And it's good to go. It's got its own clubhouse. It's got 12 holes plus for people. I don't know how much traveling your listeners do, Matthew. Clearly, you know, they're like you probably, that they don't get out as much as Mitch and I do.
Right.
But there's a short course at Bandon called the Preserve. And on the final hole, the 13th hole, a lot of times people will hit one shot and then they'll putt one because it kind of goes down the slope.
Yeah.
We have a hole like that, hole 7.5. So after you hit a shot over the water, there's this, you walk up into this high point and then you try to putt one into the hole as well. So there's really 12.5 holes, I guess, out there.
Yeah.
But the turf is fantastic. Like I was as skeptical as anybody when I heard the word turf way back
Right.
when.
Yeah.
But it kind of, once you've played like a hole, you forget that you're not playing on grass. You're just hitting golf shots
and having
a blast.
That to me is, I told Jason this when we talked about it. When you're my age, and you're a kid, but for you too, when you hear artificial turf or synthetic turf, you're thinking Astrodome.
Right.
And you're going, hey, you can't play golf on that stuff. What do you, but right. This is, like you said, as close to real grass as you're ever going to get.
Yeah.
And so it just opened. And I know in the first few days, the videos and stuff, thanks to you, my friend, holes in one. And my favorite was there, and I wish I knew his name. I think he's 8 years old that made a hole in
one. Oh, yeah.
On the first time there, and his dad, and the whole thing is just miraculous to me. And I should mention, you said merch is going crazy with the Matchbox. That's always a good thing.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And the logo was kind of a team effort. A lot of people had their thumbs in the pie to get it to where it is, but people love the little Matchbox with the flag coming out of it. Like I said, it's got its own clubhouse down there, and the kind of the visionary part of it was the clubhouse is accessible from hole 13 as you're going on hole 13 on Tobacco Road. So now it serves as a halfway house for the back nine. You can stop in there. There's bathrooms, there's food, there's goodies, you know, whatnot. You can see the merch, you know, you can see people teeing off on number one of the Matchbox and think to yourself, oh, wow, we've got to come do that. So it's really that back to the synthetic. So Mark Stewart's son, Wesley, works for the USGA up in Pinehurst. And so kind of green speeds and green firmness and that kind of thing are his specialties.
Wow.
So they measured these greens because, you know, it's a complex process. You've got a mat, you've got the high quality turf on the top. They sand them so that it helps dampen the bounce of that first bounce. Mm-hmm. And when they tested them, they came up U.S. Open firm, basically, is how they described them. And so that first bounce can get you a little bit, especially if it comes in low.
Yeah.
But the spin, if you're spinning shots in, it's just like hitting it on grass. I've seen people spin them back. I've seen people play off the slopes.
Yeah.
And everything is short. Like,
well,
40 to 105 yards.
Perfect for me.
And you're just hitting wedges and having a good time. We had 14 holes in one on opening weekend. So nine on the first day, five on the second day.
That's pretty good marketing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, everyone from, like you mentioned, an 8-year-old to you know, people my age out there making holes in one. Some of the holes are kind of built for that. They've got bowls and, you know, to kind of feed the ball. And other ones, you know, you'd have a tough time making three.
Yeah.
So it's not a pushover.
You haven't played with me for a while. So I'm just saying, I think
the course record is held by one of those kids, because the U.S. kids was in town last week in Pinehurst.
Right.
So we had a bunch of kids come play.
Yeah.
Who just found it through social and everything else.
Yep.
And a couple of them went really low. Like the record for like one day was -3. And then I think one on Sunday or Monday, I think one of the kids just obliterated it and went really low. So,
well, they actually have a wedge game, unlike me and Mitchie. And I had a very funny conversation with him about it. But I can't wait. And I'm going to pursue this at some point, all of us meeting there.
We definitely should. Let me say one other thing about Strantz too, because sometimes I see comments where people say, oh, Mike Strantz wouldn't want this. That we specifically brought Mark White, who was a shaper for Mike, on Tobacco Road. Mm-hmm. He's part of the design team.
Right.
He was the guy who shaped a lot of these greens, and some of them are world-class greens when you look at the way they're designed.
Right.
And he brought that whole Mike Strantz vibe to it that was, you make this wonderful walk through these trees. He's the guy who helped bring it to life and make it feel like it belongs right next door to Tobacco Road.
He would have been the first one to say, we can't do this.
Exactly.
He would have been the first one. So all those people can, you know,
exactly.
Or yeah. Whatever. All right. Before I let you go, you sent me something else. It's exactly what I'm talking about. You and Mitch are going to Gamble Sands in September. So you can kick rocks too, pal. I'm just saying.
What?
Did I say that out loud? I'm happy for you and Mitch.
We're taking a group. Yes.
Gamble
Sands. This group now, this will be the third time for this specific group, but the first time Mitch gets to join us. And Gamble Sands is just fantastic. Everybody hears about Bandon, Sand Valley, all those. Gamble Sands belongs in that conversation.
Right.
You know, I say it because I work there, but I was a huge fan of Gamble before I ever worked in their marketing. Same with Tobacco Road.
Yeah.
And 50 holes designed by David McClay Kidd there.
Amazing.
Both primary golf courses have been best new public by Golf Digest.
Pretty good.
10 years apart,
yeah,
2014 and then 2024.
Yeah.
They just added, they had a guy drag his barbecue smoker all the way from Georgia to start running a barbecue program up there, and it is amazing.
This
guy does brisket. He does barbacoa.
Okay. You can't. I'm hungry.
You're a New Yorker. You would love this pastrami.
Okay. So I'm hungry. You got to
get you out there.
Yes. All right.
But everybody should be going to Gamble Sands. It should be at the top of their list in terms of these destination clubs.
Right.
It's between Seattle and Spokane in Washington State. It's fantastic.
All right. Well, you're fantastic. And thank you so much for doing this. I know how busy you are, and I really meant what I said at the beginning. I respect you more than you know, and what you do is pretty fantastic work. So we'll talk again soon. It won't be as long as in between as the last time. It's great to see you.
I appreciate it, and I will find time for you for this show anytime, Matthew.
Okay. Thanks, man. See you.
Thanks. Bye. Okay.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.
Welcome back. It's always a great day for Backspin Golf when I get to talk to my bud, Dan Houser, who is down there as we're going to be speaking, down there in Florida in his car in that beautiful weather, and the traffic is great. It's just a great time for us to talk. Hi, Dan.
It's a swampland down here at the moment. So I don't know how beautiful it is, but I think this is the one time a year though where my weather is basically the same as everyone else's, because to hear everyone else talk, it sounds like the whole country is just one giant swampland right now.
Yeah, and hot. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So it's like kind of like we're living in Florida, kind of.
So I can't even brag about it right now. But when we're talking in December, then I'll be bragging about it plenty. You
guys. Yeah, I know. All right. Here's where I want to start with you. I want to talk about Liv. And, you know, everybody that listens to this show knows how I feel about Liv and have always felt about it. And you too, pretty much. But now we got all this stuff with this CEO guy. I don't even know who he is. And he says that he has an investor, although we don't know who it is. And so I want to get your thoughts on Liv 2.0. So let's chat about it for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he says he has somebody who's a money person. I believe he did use the word investor, which makes it overly interesting because twofold. One, you know, if you have an investor and you've got somebody that wants to, you know, give money, wouldn't you think that you would want to make that announcement of who it was? Like, isn't that something that you would want to publicly get out there to share with the world of this new partnership agreement? So that was the first thing that was strange to me. And then also, with the way it was worded, you know, investor doesn't necessarily mean somebody's just going to give you money. You know, is it an actual investment? Is it, private equity? Is it essentially, you know, investment in the form of a loan? So, what does that mean for the current contracts? Because I'm sure whoever the hell it is, or heck it is, my apologies, that is doing this is not going into this with a bank account that the Saudis have, aka they're not just going to cut John Rahm a $150 million check for his previous contract that he signed. So does that mean now too that the Saudis are just going to try to pay up what they still owe? You know, I saw a story yesterday that they may try to essentially work it out with money still owed on player contracts and essentially just see what kind of discounted rate they can cut them for a check for and move on. Mm-hmm. Are we still headed to bankruptcy for Liv and this new person's going to essentially come on in once the bankruptcy stuff has been filed and everything's done, in which case, you know, John Rahm and those guys are going to get nothing because, you know, they're probably far enough down on the credit. Well, John Rahm may get a little something because he'd probably be the number one creditor of being owed $150 million.
Correct.
But,
yes.
You know, and so there are way more questions than answers. And I think that this has been a theme so far with this new CEO of Liv. Every time he opens up his mouth, it doesn't actually answer anything. Instead, it just creates about 50 more questions on top of the ones that still have not been answered.
Right. Exactly. Now, what they are, he told everyone, they're going to reduce the schedule from the 14 events that they supposedly had to about 10 beginning next year in 2027. The purses are going to be cut pretty drastically. They were $25 to $30 million purses. The winners were getting $4 million, and you know, as a joke, no cut. Everybody got paid. And proposing that rather than rely, I'm reading this, as heavily on guaranteed contracts, giving players larger equity stakes in the business. Now, I'm just going to say, I don't know anything about finances. Nothing. I have a checking account. I have a savings account. That's the extent for me. But if I'm a player and they're telling me we'll give you equity in the business when you don't know how successful the business is going to be, I'm not doing it, period. These guys that joined Liv when it started, as you said, they got a ton of money up front and then contracts on top of it. John Rahm, his $150 million that they still owe him, that's not all he got. He got a ton of money to sign up. So that right there, I'm going, this ain't going to work. And maybe that's just me, but I don't think so.
Well, let's not forget, for these guys, it was never about the money. It was never about the money.
Right.
It was about being
able
to
growing
spend more
the game
with their families.
Yeah.
And spend more time with their families. So you know what happens when you drop the schedule down from 14 to 10? More time with the family. So
yeah.
For these guys, hey, they wanted to spend more time with their families. They're exactly what they asked for. So don't forget, it was never about the money. So they're not concerned with money. They want to spend more time with their families.
Yeah. Okay, we could really get into a lot of that
stuff. Which is exactly what they'll do now with with only 10 events. They'll be able to spend all the time with their families they want. So they should be jumping and doing cartwheels and backflips right now with this new schedule and this new plan. That's right, what they were asking for.
Yeah. all right, let's move on from Liv. Something else I wanted to talk to you about, and now that we're in August, we are going to be hearing a lot more, the Wyndham Championship this week, and then the FedEx Cup playoffs start. It's only three events this year.
Your favorite, and, all those FedEx Cup points.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. And this year, there are only 70 guys that qualify for the FedEx Cup. So this Wyndham tournament, however it turns out, is huge because there are a lot of guys in the 70 to 80 range that are trying to get into the top 70. But that's not, we'll talk about the FedEx Cup playoffs as they go along. I wanted to get your thoughts, if you have any, if you've thought, I know you have thoughts, Dan, but if you've thought at all about the President's Cup, which is coming up in September, which is now only a month away. Have you thought about this at all? The team hasn't been picked yet. Following the BMW Championship at the end of August, the automatic qualifiers, the international team is after the Tour Championship, and then the captains have their picks, and Brent Snedeker is the U.S. captain this year. He says, by the way, that the team race is wide open. There are over 20 players in contention. So this is, you know, we've had a lot of the PGA Tour season where we've kind of gone, yeah, okay, what else? Who's playing in Europe? That's what I ask. But now this is going to get, it'll get pretty interesting now.
Yeah, I'll admit I have not been following it too closely this time around. Over the years for me, now, granted, once balls are in the air, yeah, I'll watch it. You know, it's something on TV. It's always fun. You know, you get into the rah-rah of USA, but...
No, I don't.
It's just,
sorry.
It's just for me overall, the President's Cup has just been tough for me to get a lot of juice behind, and just in general in life. Obviously, the Ryder Cup is the Ryder Cup for a reason.
Right.
You know, the President's Cup has its place. I think more people, or not, I shouldn't say more people. I think some people view the President's Cup for the Americans as, hey, let's do this. Let's, you know, dry run for the Ryder Cup. Let's use this opportunity to maybe test some guys out and see how they do, or how they'll do in this type of setting, whether it's new guys or new pairings for guys who've done it before. You know, I don't disagree with that mindset. I know that's not always the mindset, but if that's the way it was kind of taken, and you know what, it's not. And it hasn't really ever been, and I think that's the problem, which is surprising because there really is a lot of talent outside of just Europe at the international stage. But it's just never been a competitive event,
right?
For whatever reason, and it always seems to baffle me when you consider, like I said, you know, the Adam Scott and Jason Days of the world, and all the great players from Asia and Japan, and you know that whole part of the world. And they just can't seem to put anything together. And it's always just been kind of surprising to me.
Yeah.
Completely unrelated note.
No, that's a very good point, by the way. But if we can, you know, we can get to see these guys, I feel the same way about it. And of course, it's always compared to the Ryder Cup, which has all the history. So I understand that. But as I said, for me, this will at least give me some excitement in the last, you know, the FedEx. Because you know what? I don't care who wins the FedEx Cup. I really don't. I think you know that. When we start, when they're showing who's leading the FedEx Cup standings after the first event of the year, I'm disgusted already. So I really don't
care. Oh, come
on.
No, Your favorite, now that won't even be the case anymore because the Hawaii swing, it seems to be going away. But come on, your favorite was always after the first round of the first of Hawaii, after three shots have been hit, you already got the FedEx Cup tracker on the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. You know me too well.
The season long race.
All right. Now, here's something I thought we would try. I think this is interesting. I'm going to throw out some topics from the world of golf. And I just want you to give me your quick thoughts on them. Okay?
Let's do it.
Ready? Okay.
Yep.
Range finders.
I don't use them.
Okay.
I know plenty of people that do use them. I can understand the appeal of them. I just don't use them.
Well, here's what I think. I have a phone, like a smartphone.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have an app that I've been using for as long as they've been out that gives me exactly what I need, which is front, middle, and center, and it's free. So
exactly.
You know.
And also most clubs these days too, or courses, we'll have the GPS on the golf
cart.
On
the cart. Now,
Okay. Now, granted, I'll get that number front, middle, and center, and I'll still miss all three of them, but that's another story for another time.
Me too. But at least I know how badly I've missed. Yeah.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. Oh, I only had 90 to the front, and I hit it 79? Okay. I can see that. Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. Right. Appreciate it.
Now, what about this? Golf simulators.
You know what? So I think that I'm going to have an interesting answer just because of my location, because I'm in South Florida. Now we do have those types of simulator places down here.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is because of where I'm at and the weather down here, there's really, if I wanted to go and hit balls,
you just go hit balls
down here. The weather is conducive to doing that outside here at a driving range or a golf course year round. So
right.
I don't really use them. That being said, I think that for those in the rest of the country where that is not a luxury and people are snowed in for a significant amount of year and the golf courses are closed, I think that is an absolutely great invention and one of the better things that allows people to be able to practice year round, even if they don't have the weather to be able to do so outside.
Plus,
I've been told too that they are fun social places too, where you can just
hang
out with friends and maybe have a couple drinks and have some fun.
Yep, and they're great because now they are so amazing that you can play all courses from all over the world, and it's just that part of it is really great. All right,
that too. I was going to say I know that they've basically made the technology where you can upload and play, St. Andrews or Pebble Beach or it's legitimate like you're there too.
Yeah, it's awesome. Plus, as you said, you get to have a couple of beverages, which always makes it more fun. Okay, how about this one, Dan Houser? Walking or riding?
Well, where I'm here in South Florida, obviously, it's a little tough to walk, not for multiple reasons. A lot of courses, just don't want walkers, and then also the heat can make it a little tricky to walk. So I tend to go on the riding side of things. That being said, if I go play a par 3 course and they have the ability to walk, I will walk that one because really on a par 3 course, it's actually more of a pain to be in a cart because you can't take the cart on the green anyway. So walking actually, I think that when you're walking, playing a par 3 course, you can actually get around in faster than if you're in a cart.
Yep. Good point. I unfortunately can't walk 18 holes anymore. It's just too much for me.
Well, I'm too lazy to do it too. So I guess there's some of that as well.
Okay. Well, thanks for admitting that on my award-winning show. Okay. How about this? Ooh, this is a good one. Golf YouTube instructors. This is a good one.
You're setting me up for that one. Yeah,
I am because obviously. This is huge now. So I know I'll tell you what my thoughts are. I think you probably know. What are your thoughts on taking lessons from YouTube?
Well, obviously, since you know me so well, you know that I just can't get enough of Bryson's YouTube channel, and I just watch it 24 hours a day. So there's my thoughts on the YouTubers.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah, I can honestly tell you I don't think I've ever watched a single clip of golf on YouTube.
Me either. I knew that answer was coming too. But as we know, a lot of people do. I'll admit, every once in a while, because of the algorithms, I'll get a video or a reel with a simple golf tip. And I'll look at it, and sometimes they're good and helpful sometimes.
I mean, listen, the fact that tournaments are being held for like big money of being contested by nothing but YouTube golf people.
There is a
interest in it and a thirst for it and people are watching. It's just not for me.
Right. Okay. Me either. Got it. All right. I think that's about it. Unless you have something else you'd like to throw in and discuss about the world of golf.
I think we covered what's happening pretty good right now.
All right. Well, the next time I speak to you, we will be discussing the FedEx Cup playoffs.
I can't wait. Looking forward to it already.
Okay.
I'm gonna start studying up on the race right now and see who's in what positions.
That a boy. I will say this. I'm gonna say this. This week, Jackson Koivun, who we didn't even mention, and I've already talked about a lot. Jackson Koivun is now in 70th place, which is the final FedEx Cup points standings to get in the playoffs. He has done that in 5 events. 5. I am beyond excited about this guy. Seriously,
he's one of those ones where I was saying, I think that, you know, if you want to use the President's Cup to try to test guys out, he should be getting put on the team.
Yeah, absolutely. I already last week had a discussion with somebody about who asked me about whether he should be on the Ryder Cup team. And I went, are you out of your mind? Yes, he should be on the Ryder Cup team, even though it's a year away. Name him to it right now. Idiots.
At least get him on the President's Cup team.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Let's start there. Okay. All right. Thanks a million, Danny boy. Be safe on your drive, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Always good talking to you.
Okay. See ya. That'll do it. Once again, another episode of Backspin Golf it's not in the books. It's however, I don't know. Sean will tell me what I should say there. Anyway, thanks for joining me. Thanks to my guests, Darren Bunch and Dan Houser, for another great episode. And thanks to my partners, the Woodford Club, Kentucky Golf Trail, and Lexington Parks and Rec. I couldn't do the show without them. I'm eternally grateful for their support. Have a great week. We'll be back next Sunday. ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.